see my friends coming, riding many a mile. Friends, you get some silver, you get a little gold. What did you bring me, my dear friends? Keep me from the gallows pole. What did you bring me? Keep me from the gallows pole. I couldn't get no silver, I couldn't get no gold. You know that we're too damn poor from the gallows pole.
Guy out next guy would come in.
I was kind of
like,
just
like he's
three
in a row.
Looking for the gallows pole.
They're killing him, and they're killing him. There's two guys beating the tar out of that one guy, and there's two guys over here kicking the shit out of this one guy. I wonder which one of those guys is going to get eliminated first, so that the other, so that they can all meet up over the one guy's body. Yeah, we're bringing the violence here. Should we kick it off?
Yeah, yeah, I guess just to kick things off.
Cheers to Andy Orchards. Eric, hell yeah, cheers to you.
Episode 39, I believe.
Damn.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Is everybody awake?
More or less.
Did you sleep
as
today?
As much as it gets. Yeah, slept today.
And you slept all day.
I slept all day.
I don't think you saw the sunshine.
I saw it peek through my blinds a little bit for a period of time, and it was very irritating, you know. It was very hostile. Woke up with a weird, I don't know. It could just be a hangover. It could be sickness. Could be sickness and a hangover working in tandem to just fucking work me over.
It could be that you're just a big sissy.
It could be. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I woke up and I had to pee. And then I was also so dehydrated. And then I made it into the restroom to pee. And I was like, wait, wait. Yep, yep. I'm going to throw up here. I'm going to throw up here real quick.
While you're peeing.
And then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to pour myself a glass of water and just go back to bed. Just try and make it through this shit. And then at various points I'd wake up, and again it was just like my entire body was like a fucking desert or something. We had a empty 2-liter soda bottle that I wound up just filling with water and taking up with me. And then at some point Weston sent me a text being like, hey, you going to make it?
And you guys, an hour till a start.
Yeah, and you guys determined that I was still in the house at that point? Yeah. Wasn't sure.
I keep talk on you. I watch you when you sleep.
Well,
sometimes he posts videos.
Hey, it's comforting. It's comforting.
Only the comics know about. So you got off at like 6:30?
8. So
8. Yeah, how long do you sleep when you work all night?
Depends on what shit I have to do that day. I didn't get up today until fucking 4:30 or something like that.
Oh, nice. You got a good day's worth.
Yeah, I had daylight for about half an hour.
Wow. Yeah.
That's the one rough thing about Colorado Beth and I have been talking about, is I can't handle how early it gets dark.
Well, it gets super fucking dark, and then it's just like, oh, well, the day is shot, you know? I saw something...
You can't do photo shoots for shit.
Right.
It ruins everything.
Well, I saw something, and it was about how, like, the 8-hour workday, how, like, on average, most people actually only, like, achieve 3 to 4 hours of work during the 8-hour workday, and there's just so much bullshit, but that it really helps us, you know, just watch TV and buy shit. Because it's like, you aren't really that interested in putting that much effort to better yourself when most of the prime hours of your day have been stripped away from you, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah.
I slow way down in the winter. Like today we took this walk down here. It's like 4:30 walking back. The sun's already behind the mountains. It's like, oh my God, I'm ready for bed. 4:30. I haven't even done anything today.
No, I'm ready for bed all the fucking time anymore. Kids just drain you.
Are you still doing school too?
Yeah, school full time. School, work,
and like 7 kids? Is that how many?
12.
12 kids. 12 kids. Do you ever, do you mix up their names a lot?
Very rarely. Very rarely. Not nearly as much as I thought I would. I call my oldest my little brother's name every once in a while, which is kind of weird.
Do you swear around them at all?
Fuck yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. They swear too. They swear well.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Do
you have to properly. They conjugate their swear words. They, oh, good. They swear like adults, which
present
is all
participle,
I ask for.
Present participle.
Do you ever have to get on them and ask them not to swear in front of certain people?
Very rarely. Actually, they're really good about knowing what they can say and in front of who. We had the whole language discussion. It was more centered around how other people's feelings can get hurt by your language, so you don't have the right to offend other people with your language. But you know, it's a fucking word.
Unless you're at a comedy show.
Well, yeah, right. And then you have every right to defend whoever you want because there's a door.
And you're barely doing your job, yeah. If
yeah, exactly.
Somebody's not a little offended.
There's some comics I won't book purely because there's not enough fucks in their acts. Sorry, T.
Look, there's a little bit of a language barrier here between us. It just sounds so damn nice. And then, I don't know. I don't respond well to it.
I had trouble swearing when I first started. Remember we used to
There's no walkouts.
Yeah. And I've dirtied it
worked
up
to it, yeah.
On stage. Yeah, you were telling me once. Oh, shit. You were telling me one time that you, like, in person talk pretty similar to how I talk on stage, but you could never do that on stage. I thought, I remember laughing and thinking that was...
It was always like, it always felt like it didn't come off. It felt like people were... thinking I was doing it for effect, which I hate that shit when people they just swear to say
Andrew Dice Clay
fuck. I just wanted to say the C word during my set in front of in public because it's edgy. It's
pretty like, edgy. Most other contexts I'm not allowed to do that in public.
My boss gets mad because she's a cunt, so fuck her.
Don't cunt.
But yeah, so I think the transition I made is like I just to try to talk more like I talk in everyday conversation.
That's pretty much what I did, because my style has changed drastically over the last 2 years particularly. It was a lot more, you know, rant-centered for a long time, and it would just be me railing against shit that pissed me off. And as of recently, it's been a lot more storytelling. Like, even the rants have been kind of in the storytelling vibe, which is a lot more natural, I think, for my word choice. You know, I get to say the words, and that doesn't seem quite as contrived when I use big words or weird words.
Sure.
Or esoteric words.
Yeah, I recall when I first saw you, and there was a little bit of the rant, and like, and I mean, we all do it, but it was to certain degrees, and before we knew each other, there'd be certain sets where I was like, oh, you know, I thought that one was a little bit more postery than some of the other times I'd say, you know, because, I mean, your comedy style is definitely like, you know, it's supposed to be very provocative.
Yeah.
You know? But then there's some times where it's like, I see this all the time with all sorts of people where it's like, they have provoking material, and then for whatever reason, they just can't.
It comes off scripted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They
it
can't,
comes off
they
very
can't.
Scripted and rehearsed, which is one problem that I have because I write my shit out word for word.
I do too.
And when you write it initially and. That's like the most natural, sincere form because that's how you would think it in your head. And then you rehearse it, and then it comes out on stage like you've said it 20 times in exactly those words.
Oh,
it took a while to kind of break that habit to where it didn't sound like I was reading an essay that I had written about whatever thing I was ranting about.
Yeah, I think that some of the times too is that with material, and I don't write my sets verbatim, but material that I get super comfortable telling, where it becomes, after a while, it becomes like a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy.
Yeah.
And sometimes audiences
it's
will still chew it up, but it's like, all know. And I'm sure that other people that see me often would know, I was kind of phoning this in, you know? Like,
yeah.
And, you know, and it's always that, it's a tough thing because, you know, you get a piece of material and you like it better than a lot of your other material, and it's like, I'm going to lean on this piece pretty hard. And then after a while, yeah, it's just like, I have to imagine that it'd be like if you were a band and you had a hit single, you know, that you'd made for the radio, and then everybody always wanted to hear that, and it's like, we got new music, too, guys.
Yeah.
We got new music. And they're like, fuck your new music. Do that one.
Well,
do that
time one. You write the new music because you get so burned out with the shit that you had for that you were leaning on for a while. Like, I haven't done the Denver Dangerous story in probably well over a year. That used to be one of my favorite pieces to do, and then I just did it, like, that was my closer on every show for a while, and I just, like, I still would like to bring it back, but now it's like I'm writing a set list for a show, and it just doesn't make the cut because there's other shit that I want to get in there. And I feel like stuff that doesn't always hit consistently, I actually like more because I feel like I'm always working on it, so I don't burn out as quickly. Because it's like, you know, this still needs some work.
Yeah,
so I've been closing on this, it's solid, but it still needs some work.
Keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
When, like, some of the times...
it doesn't go the way you want.
Yeah. And so there's a weird balance. Now, so Weston is, he is actually going to shelf a lot of the material you've written...
I'm not going to do it at open mics. I think it's kind of where I'm thinking.
Okay. Yeah. But do you ever do that? Do you make kind of a conscious, like,
I shelf material
a lot more?
Yeah. I do it all the time. In fact, that's the main writing principle in my style. Like, I get burned out really, really quickly with my material. And I'll do something for 6 months, and then I can't cook with it anymore, and I'll shelf it. That's why my set varies drastically. When I did that, I headlined a show fucking night before Thanksgiving. And I did not overlap one piece of material that I did from the last time I headlined a show. I had written 30 minutes of brand new material, and a lot of it was reworked stuff, like that was drastically reworked, like the hipster homo bit I've been playing with for a couple of years now, and it's looked very, very different in every incarnation of its existence. And I have some pieces like that that I kind of fucked around with and changed a lot, but I've done, I mean, the bits about my daughter and then the bits about my vasectomy and all that stuff have kind of taken over some of the old stuff that I used to lean on all the time, like the marriage jokes and the married sex and all that stuff.
Do you get, every once in a while, just like an old gem pops up in your head?
Yeah.
And you're like, holy shit, why haven't I told that for 6 months?
You know? I had to force one of those out when I did Chris Carlton's show, the TV show where I had to be clean. And I had to sift through all my material and find 10 minutes I could do where I didn't say fuck, where I couldn't say fuck. You know what I mean? Like, because there's some stuff where I can clean up the language.
You didn't have to.
Yeah. There's some stuff where I can clean up the language, but there's some stuff, whether it be context or just the way it's delivered, that I cannot clean any more than it was. And one bit that I could have done on there that I didn't do because it was on 9/11 was the gun bit, and I just didn't want to go on TV ranting about guns on 9/11. Yeah, that's the last thing any redneck watching fucking TV wants to see.
Right.
But, so I that was like a real good 5 minute chunk that I could have done that I liked a lot. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that for this particular show. So then I had to go find 10 more minutes of clean material. And I pulled some of my old Wyoming shit. I pulled some of my old Utah jokes that I did when I was traveling doing a comedy a little bit. And it was kind of fun to do those stuff again. I mean, some of those jokes I hadn't done in over a year.
Sometimes cleaning up, obviously, I don't think any one of us be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna stop working blue. I don't do that anymore. You know, I really am gonna get into clean comedy. Some of the times that is a fascinating exercise. Like with the last few Mystagog Holland shows I wrote them intentionally so that, like, I mean, I think the worst words I used in the last three I did were like damn, which you could have switched to dang or darn. And so it was this thing where I was like, you know, the concept here that I'm working on does not actually hinge on cursing. And so I was like, I could write this as a children's show. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of threw myself that, like, challenge where I was like, okay, write them so that it could be an all-ages thing.
Well,
it can still be weird, but...
Yeah. Well, a lot of times, see, what it does is it forces you to reevaluate the important thing that you're saying in that particular joke. It's like, what am I saying? And you go to reword it. It's like, all right, I got to find a way to say this.
What's
without saying... take out all the fucks and shits. Exactly what does this sentence mean? And then figure out, it's like, oh, okay, this is like you're... And sometimes you get, like, working on a joke for a while and you get obsessive and to the point where it's like you're trying to work out this one wording, this one sentence, this one piece, and then you realize that it's kind of... you're almost over-directing the rest of your bit around this one part that you're stuck on. It's like, well, okay, I don't even need this. Where am I going with this? What am I trying to say with this piece of material? And find a way to fucking get there.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about working blue for me that I was going to say before, that I don't have a problem with working clean. It's not that I can't take the language or even sometimes the inappropriate context out of jokes. It's that my problem with clean material is that usually it's safe material. You're very rarely asked to do a clean show that's not safe. Right. You're asked to do a clean show because they want a safe show, and that is the antithesis of everything I do as a comic. My whole thing is about pushing the edges and making people laugh at things they don't want to laugh at, and not knowing where I could go. So if you put me in a situation where there's parameters on my material, it's like, what's the point of even doing stand-up at that point?
Eric, can you come make some people chuckle? Like,
yeah.
If Eric just got up and all his only point was just to make people...
We want to keep real positive vibes.
It's like Eric wants points of deafening silence during his sets. Like, he just wants people to be like, oh, fuck.
You think during that silence. That's what's important. Yeah. It's like asking Slayer to play some shit that you can square dance to. Right. And it's like, you know...
Can you play some elevator music for me?
Yeah, and it's like, that's nice if you want to square dance, but don't invite Slayer to fucking square dance. You know? I appreciate a lot of comics that can make you laugh without making you think. I appreciate a lot of comics that can make you laugh without having to make you uncomfortable and put you in an awkward situation. But when I want to see a show like that, I go to see those comics. Mm-hmm. I don't go to see Bill Burr. I don't go to see Louis C.K. I don't go to see Jim Jefferies when I want Jeff Dunham. I go to see fucking Jeff Dunham, except I never want to see Jeff Dunham.
Right, yeah.
So.
That'd be a...
Now, Doug Stanhope, we're thinking, you know, there's gonna be families here, positive vibe, and you know, you just seem so moody and cantankerous. Also, could you not get drunk during your set?
Yeah, right.
Could you smile more?
Could you smile more? We want people to feel welcome during this.
Well, one of the interesting things, there's no genres in stand-up. And that's one of the funny things that kind of keeps us different than music. It's like music, you can find the type of music that you like a lot more easily than finding the type of comic you like. Really, the only way to describe the way a comedian is by comparisons to other comedians, which is never an accurate way.
No.
Because everyone likes different comics for different reasons. I mean, I know people who love Louis C.K., and they don't like... The ones that make them uncomfortable are all the jokes that I love. It's like, oh, that's the best joke in the special. Yeah, that's the one I really could do without. It's like, yeah, when you suck.
He pushes it a little hard in that one.
Yeah, and it's like, that's my favorite part. I like the part where he pushes it a little hard. I like, Louis has one, he's like South Park episode, but there's one really, really over-the-top line in every special, and that's the one that always gets me in tears. And that's the one that somebody is complaining about.
Right.
Well, you know, I thought you didn't really need the bit about fucking the dead kid in the rain. And so that's the best line in the whole special.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's like, well, I did. You know, like as a comic or as a writer, some of the time, it's like, no, I absolutely had to go there.
Yeah.
Because after I thought of it, it would have been super dishonest to not... carry it along with, you know? Do you ever, though, while you're writing, do you ever write anything and then go, like, oh.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
In fact, my writing process is a lot of, I think of something, and I go, wow, that's way over the top. I'll never say that on stage. And then I spend a week trying to figure out how I can get the essence of that good line. And over the course of the week, I become so desensitized to how horrible that original line is that I go, fuck it. Just say it on stage and see how it goes. And then people get offended, and I've been thinking about it in my head, so... much like over the past couple weeks, that I'm completely desensitized to it. Like, it's like, that's not that offensive. And people are like, yeah, that was really over the top. It's like, yeah, I don't think so. But I did. When I first wrote it, I remember thinking, it's like, wow, that's insane. And I've done that with a lot of, probably most of the big, big lines that are shocking. And the funny thing is, those are the ones that get the biggest laughs. It's the ones that I'm saying something, like, political, like the Don't Ask, Don't Tell one that I have, where I say Don't Ask, Don't Tell is a... better describes the policy towards the rape of female soldiers. That one never does well, even though it's a brilliant fucking line. I love it. It's one of my favorite ones I've ever written. But it never does well in a crowd, and I know it's never going to do well in a crowd because it's more political than anything else. But sometimes, like, I'll think of something that is like not really saying anything that needs to be said, but it's like such a beautifully disgusting visual. And those are the ones that crush the crowd. They'll take a joke that's doing really well, so it's like, okay, there's the closer for that because it fucking crushes. Like when I wrote in the vasectomy bit about how you come blood and why that's important they should tell you, that turned that joke around to the point where it wasn't just grossing out audiences. And what's funny is what made that not a gross out story and into a really good hard hitting joke was the most disgustingly graphic line in the entire piece. And that's what pushed it over to the edge to actually being funny. It's like, oh, the story's kind of gross. Well, let's add something a little bit grosser that's even more absurd. It's like, okay, now it's funny. Now it's full circle.
It's like, oh, you thought that was gross.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a good opportunity to talk about your show you put together, because you're both on the weirder end, outlandish end of the spectrum, shocking.
Different ends of the same spectrum of weirdness, I think, which is why that was such a... a natural go-to, I think, for us. It's the reason we've been talking about it for so long.
It's such a great, like, teaming up of weirdness.
Yeah. It really is an interesting collaboration, because Nick is very much on the more bizarre end of pushing people's sensibilities, and I'm much more on the controversial end of pushing people's sensibilities, but what we both hinge on in our act is being able to take an audience to somewhere where they're not quite ready to go and make them laugh in that place. And that's what's so fun about Theater of Cruelty, is that you don't need that in an audience. I mean, you can take... Part of the game, really, is taking a crowd that doesn't really know what they're getting into and making them enjoy the show no matter what. And there is a degree of art into taking a group of strangers that aren't there to suit your purposes and getting them to enjoy what you do. But a crowd that is there for that purpose gives you a lot more artistic flexibility. And then you can push yourself to your limits as an artist and not necessarily to the limits of what that particular crowd might be willing to handle on that particular night. And because most of the shows that we play are not shows like this. They're local shows with all kinds of comics that do. I mean, guys like Bob Gaudette and T that are super, that can get super, super clean and are never going to piss off an audience with their subject matter.
Right.
And those are like the crux of the shows that are going on in Fort Collins and even Denver. There's not a whole lot of provocative. So we do, to a degree, have to operate within those parameters and be able to bend our personal styles to that length. But it is nice to be able to have something that's a little more catered towards what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, so telling somebody like Miles, go all out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's so nice to be able to put Miles on a show and say, Miles, you be the Milesest you've ever fucking been.
Right, like don't, because...
This isn't a family
restaurant.
Although
he is pretty committed to it most of the time. He's got great commitment pretty much all the time. But you can still be like, okay, but what if Miles felt truly and utterly comfortable in a room that like the advertisement had been so that he wasn't following like some really happy-go-lucky glad-handing kind of hand-holding
set up punch. And I think that's the biggest thing that turns people off with Miles is not so much the fact that he's weird and dark and uncomfortable, is that he doesn't, and a lot of us don't write set up punchline jokes. I mean, you're a long form comic, mm-hmm. I'm a long form comic. But it's very difficult to have, especially when you have a bizarre style. I mean, we're long-form comics, but we can get laughs in 15 seconds and then pull those consistently through a set. Whereas, like, Miles, part of his style is that he doesn't command the laughter right away.
Well, and
what makes him funny is the...
Get or don't get.
Yeah.
What he's doing. And this is... It's nice to have a show that right off the bat in the advertisement is like...
If you don't get it, that's your fault, sort of.
Or, well, and it's also like, hey, you very well might not get it. Again, because there are people that stand-up comedy to them is Jeff fucking Dunham.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty sure we all feel the same way
about Brian Jeff Regan. Dunham.
Love him. And, is that what you're
talking about? All about.
Okay.
Just so family-friendly, you know? He takes all the fucks and shit, but he keeps the hard racism in.
Yeah,
and that's
he keeps
what
the
I
racism.
Like.
That's
yeah,
what I
no,
I like
my family comedy with some hard racism.
That's something you watch with your family over Christmas
break. That's bankable. Yeah, that's bankable.
Part of what I resent about being considered an offensive comic sometimes, it's like, well, what's your idea of offensive? I push the lines a little bit on people's sensibilities, because I like to make people laugh
Jeff
on
Dunham
things.
Jeff Dunham offends me.
But that
his puppets that offends
him. It kind of does sometimes. I mean, he's got some racist shit in his act.
Oh,
yeah,
he's got such racist stuff. It's just funny that it's okay.
Yeah, and that's
it's
considered
that
completely acceptable
is...
because it's delivered from a hey, we can all laugh at this racism together because we're all ignorant Americans.
Well,
which
we're
all smiley white
when
people.
They pan the crowd after he has his little terrorist doll, and just the fucking faces that people just. Eating that shit up.
Big,
what the
stupid,
fuck is wrong with
white
But then
people.
They're offended by somebody who makes a joke that's saying a good thing, but
right.
they're pushing, making
they
you
a
little
word,
bit uncomfortable.
Bad word.
Yeah, a bad word, or they just they
create
approach
a bad
it
image
an uncomfortable subject matter. I mean, I have a lot of material. Like, I refuse to refer to any of them as rape jokes anymore because I've gotten into so much trouble over the years with rape jokes. But I have
you
a lot
call
of jokes.
Grape jokes.
Yeah, right? I just call them great jokes.
Great jokes.
But yeah, like, I don't even call
them rape
jokes.
Oh, they're just great, but they're also about rape.
Yeah.
Rape jokes.
It takes a little bit of the edge off of it. It's called rape.
It's more fun without permission.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, and that's the funny thing is that there's this odd thing about the degree of political correctness in America now to where...
Is to where you get in less trouble for saying the wrong thing the right way than saying the right thing the wrong way.
Yeah.
As you can say something like, all my rape material is very positive and very anti-rape. But that doesn't matter to people who are offended
it's
by this.
Still
they don't give
the
a fuck what
right.
you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't talk about that. Which is kind of asinine, because the whole idea of talking about something in a comedy show is to kind of open people's minds so they can think about it, so they can have some dialogue about it in their actual life. So
right.
it's on, kind of ironic to me that somebody will go to a comedy show and go, you know, I didn't like the way you talked about something in such a way that it made me easier to talk about a serious social problem.
Right.
We'd rather just ignore this and sweep it under the rug forever if you didn't
mm-hmm.
have to make a funny about it.
Well, and that, I don't know, that always creates an interesting thing that I'm always back and forth about, which is sort of that it's fascinating because it is like, well, what is the purpose of a comedy show? You
mm-hmm.
know, and everybody approaches it. And so on some level, when you name it something like Theater of Cruelty, it's like, hey, this isn't just a happy,
just to
feel
make it
good
laugh.
Yuck
I think
yucks.
It's a great title.
Well, it's,
yeah, oh yeah,
it's based thing. On it's based on a real theatrical movement
yeah,
that this
I read
guy was doing.
Thing and, on the lyric deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, Anton and Artaud's theater movie. It's like an avant-garde. Well, he was an avant-garde playwright originally, and then he sort of decided to take surrealism beyond surrealism to the point where it was actually a surrealist approach to realism. I mean, he took it full circle to the point where it's like he wanted to talk about real stuff and impact the crowd sincerely. And he thought that you couldn't make the crowd react honestly if they are comfortable. Because comfort in a crowd allows you to have the judgment to go, you know, I won't laugh at that. I won't. I draw the line here. I'm not going to support that kind of thing with my laughter. And his idea was very much, you don't have the option of playing judgment. It's your sincere feelings. And he would use, you know, bizarre effects and grotesque sounds and all kinds of
well,
shit.
Well, it's like, yeah, if you push it hard enough, then you're going to get people in this very uneasy place, and
that's where sincerity
be,
lives.
And some people are just going to shut down right off the bat, and it's like good riddance to bad rubbish with those people. And then other people are going to be trying to keep up with the ride, you know. And it's like, and that's people that think. And classically, you know, amongst Dadaist and Surrealist playwrights, there's some really interesting stuff. This guy Tristan Tzara would just randomly start like hitting thunder. He had like, you know, a big metal sheet to make the thunder sounds, and he would just start right during the dialogue and everything. so that people who went to see one of his plays had this weird thing where there were all these moments where it was like, wait, is something going wrong here? You know? And but the play would soldier through. And yeah, I mean you get people, I think especially in seeing live performance of things, and you look at it and why probably music and live performance in towns like Fort Collins does better and is more specific than comedy. And it's like that you like to put things in a box,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's this very safe little box. It's like, I totally understand what's going on here. And yeah, I'm very interested in
breaking that box,
denying people.
Exactly, and I'm the same way, in a very different way, but doing the exact same thing. And I feel like Theater of Cruelty allows us to kind of to say good riddance to bad rubbish to any crowd that normally would be like that, get uppity when they get uncomfortable. And unfortunately, with comedy, because we do like to put things in a box, you have a lot of people go to a stand-up show with their preconceived ideas of what stand-up is, or what comedy is, or what our job is, and what they're supposed to be doing in a show, and they get uppity quickly if it doesn't fit their idea. And I think the Theater of Cruelty in its essence has the lyric backing us in everybody unanimously saying, get the fuck out. If you're not down for this, then get the fuck out. This isn't for you. This
and
isn't a show for you.
It's curious to see who, you know,
it'll be very peculiar to see
who survives.
Who shows up.
Yeah.
Because the way they're marketing this has been phenomenal.
Yeah,
and I think
is.
Our posters do a fine job at portraying
mm-hmm.
exactly the attitude that we, at least, are trying to portray.
I saw this great comment. This girl I went to school with, she RSVP'd, you know, I was going to the show, and then somebody
posted, are you sure? Something
or
like that.
Be careful.
Yeah.
You know? I like that. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
People are seeing, you know, oh, Emma's going to Theater of Cruelty. Emma!
Sounds a little edgy.
You know,
yeah,
like,
it sounds dangerous.
Be
right around Christmas?
And
yeah,
enticing.
Like, why are you doing that right after Christmas?
Jesus was just born.
Is everything okay?
You
know,
give it a few weeks.
And so, yeah, I liked that we could evoke that sort of response.
That reaction so quickly, because that was like the day it was posted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
yeah.
Within 2 days, I saw the same thing, and I thought the same thing. I was like, yes.
Like,
good.
That's fucking
We're
awesome.
Successful already.
That's
this is already going exactly the direction
even
I want
by
this
the
to
merits
go.
Of name and media for it, it's like, yeah, we've done it well.
You know?
So that some people are going to go, and then other people are going to be like, theater of pool, how was it? How did it go?
Well, what's ironic, too, is a lot of the people who will be interested enough to say how did it go are the people who will be right on the edge of enjoying it, but they don't want to go because they're intimidated that they might not act the way they want to. They might not respond to being uncomfortable the way that they want to. But I think that's a good thing. I think that when people, other people that they, those type of people know, go to the show and say, yeah, it was phenomenal, it's an awesome comedy show, or whatever, that gets, builds their curiosity even more until they finally go, you know what, maybe I don't need to hang on to this. I don't approve of these kind of jokes. I don't approve of this kind of thing. I'm going to come in with an attitude. And they just let go and go to the show and enjoy it.
Well, and by all means, come to it.
Absolutely.
Get pissed. Come to it and get pissed. But, you know.
But no, yeah, that's what you're there to see.
Yeah. And we're not here to hold your hand.
I'm planning on being pissed.
Good. Good.
Specifically when Miles goes up. I think we need to amp that feud back up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What happened with that? I didn't ever got a chance to listen to that particular episode.
Well, so...
We put a lot of hard work into editing a lot of shit. And
yeah, and...
he wasn't too happy with that?
No, actually, it was... The whole thing was like a fake professional wrestling style feud. Where we just decided we had him over, and he came over, and then we recorded a nice little interview. But before we recorded the nice interview, we recorded like three segments. But instead of like being skits of like, oh, and Miles, you play such and such and everything, it was instead that Miles was just playing Miles, and we were playing ourselves, and things weren't going at all well.
We were trying to get him to do his character.
Yeah,
it's like the WWE thing. Like,
and so,
we need a villain.
And so we decided to take on Miles, and we recorded this segment, and we were just like, you know, that was so unpleasant that we can't air that. And then, you know, he started the hashtag of release the tapes, and we were like, bury the tapes, and there was this back and forth, and a bunch of people walked up to us, and we're like, what's going on? Is everything okay?
Yeah.
And then, after a couple weeks of releasing little sound bites of being like, you know, we've still been getting pressure about, the Miles tapes, and so then we would play one of the segments that was like us just all screaming at each other. And then at the end of it, we're like, fine, we released the tapes, and it was a perfectly okay, cordial, respectable interview. But then
we had him back on and we explained it all.
Yeah, and the feedback, and so it was a great little segment. The only problem was that a lot of people didn't put
our time, you know.
And they just,
we're ahead of our time.
They just assumed.
They just don't get it.
Yeah, they just assumed that we really had started bad blood with Miles. And Miles is, you know, for how edgy his material is and everything, he's strangely darling. You know,
yeah,
he's damn lovable. For
well, I think that's
what's
so funny is a lot of the comedy community. I mean, some of the spikiest comics on stage are some of the most enjoyable ones to be around in actual life. You know, I don't think anybody is quite as weird or quite as provocative or quite as mean or quite as anything that people would describe their act as on stage in real life. It's, you know, it's your act on stage is to a large degree an exaggeration of who you are.
That's a caricature.
Yeah, exactly.
I always think of it in terms of, you know. And sometimes that, you know, allows people the freedom to go way bigger or more bizarre or, you know, say things. Or it's like, well, I'd never say this in real life. But this isn't real life. This is stand-up.
This is stand-up. And you can kind of take it a little bit further because it's a fucking joke.
Well, and to me, you know, the most fascinating thing is that stand-up, although you're right, you know, it doesn't have genres or anything like that, and that anybody and everybody would have, like, a clear list of parameters of, you know, what they would consider stand-up or not, that is very simple, you know? It's back to, like, the ancient definition of theater to the Greeks, which is, like, a performer, a space, and an audience,
mm-hmm.
You know? And so it's the idea that it's so lonely and so bare bones, you know, and that all you really have is, like, a time limit. And then who the fuck knows
what your head creates.
I mean, Weston has started singing.
Really?
Yeah, I tried.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I was just like making fun of the Light Bright song. Talking about being colorblind. It went over really well Wednesday night. talking about little kid games I can't play, or I couldn't play. Like I Spy and Twister.
I Spy. Oh, man.
Yeah, Twister's got to be weird.
Yeah. I just say that they automatically called me out. They're like,
put your limb on the black dot.
Right arm, red. Weston's out. Like, real quick. Like, damn it. They didn't even let me try.
They should write the word inside the thing so you read.
And then everybody's red. Pointing and that's laughing red. At me. They're like, your eyes don't work right. Sucks being a kid, man.
Yeah.
It's rough.
Being childhood is a tough time in general.
Disability as a child is rough, but I made it through, you know.
You did. I'm you're a whole stronger adult. For it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, mostly whole. You still can't see color.
Yeah. Loser.
Yeah. I'm reminded every day.
While you're driving.
Especially.
And guessing.
It's really bad if the sun's setting just the right way, it'll wash the green out, really? And I literally can't see any light. And I'll get just right. close enough where it'll...
What's everybody else doing?
Yeah,
check out everyone on your
that's
red.
That's definitely part of it, but it'll...
People are not slowing down at all this way, so I think maybe I might have a red.
It'll just surprise me every now and then. I'm like, whoa, there's no light. What color is it? I'll have to ask Beth real quick or something.
Color.
Towels, color, towels.
It's green, sweetie. Okay. It's green.
Okay, I'll keep driving the same speed.
Plus, it's kind of cool, though, about, like, what you're talking about, you singing on stage and shit, is that you really, you know, with a time limit, it's all up to your own personal creative freedom. That's what I really kind of resent when audience members come in with an idea, even if their idea of comedy is closer to what I do than mm-hmm. general. People who grew up, like I did, listening to George Carlin and listened to a lot of the same comics. They might enjoy my set, but it's still like the idea of coming in with an idea of, I don't want to see this kind of a thing. It's always kind of irritating. It's like, well, why are you going to see live art? You know, buy a fucking CD if that's what you want. If you want to have predictable shit. Enjoy the fact that somebody is performing a live art in front of you, and you don't know what it is. That's the best part. I mean, I love seeing new comics because it's like people you've never seen before. Doing something that you're not anticipating. It's going to do right. jokes you haven't heard before. It's going to be a style you haven't heard before. It's going to be... I mean, the first time I saw Sam Talent, I was in tears. I was laughing so hard because I had never seen anybody approach stand-up with that improv background. And I don't think he told a joke the whole time I saw him. He just fucked around, made fun of the crowd, you know, dicked around with shit in the room. He was standing on tables, and I was
really?
Crying laughing.
It's hilarious.
Now, he is easily one of the most talented people I've ever met. And that is so not what I do in stand-up. You know, that is not my style of comedy by a long time. But I love it. Like, I enjoy it as an audience member. And I think it's one of the best parts about being a performer is that you get to be an audience member to so many shows. I mean, can you imagine how many free shows we've seen
right.
over the years? Seeing some incredibly talented people doing incredibly cool stuff because we perform a vaguely similar thing on that particular show. And we've had the opportunity to see all of this stuff that... Like, it's kind of irritating, like, when people go to a show, and it's like, dude, trust me, I've seen more of these than I can count. Shut the fuck up, you'll probably enjoy it.
Hmm. Well, it's also a funny thing, yeah, because you occasionally just see things at a show, and it's like, wow, never occurred to me to approach it that way.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you take it for what it's worth, and, you know, some of the times it's really specifically right up my alley, some of the times it's alienating... To me, you know, but it's like, huh.
You develop new influences every day with that shit.
And you get just this blank canvas called stand-up. And really the only parameter is that hopefully people are laughing some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, you know.
Yeah, it really is. That really is what it's about, too. And I think some of the time is probably the most important part of that sentence. The crowd's laughing some of the time. Sometimes they're listening. Sometimes you're doing shit. Sometimes you don't need them to be laughing. You need
right.
them to be paying
Absolutely.
Attention. I mean, especially with Nick. Like, Nick's stuff, and it's not... a lot of the comics that I grew up listening to, like, and particularly people who have kind of become popular recently, like Bill Burr's new special, you can see, he'll go sometimes, he'll carry on about a minute, 2 minutes sometimes without getting a laugh, because he's setting something up, or he's making a point that people are uncomfortable with. And then, I mean, Chris Rock has done the same thing. Chris Rock really popularized that style of taking the crowd on a journey that they're not quite ready to go for. It's like, no, shut up and listen, wait, and then this will start making sense. And then it's like, punchline. But that's because they're playing with emotionally manipulative material, or they're doing something controversial. And Nick will do the same thing, but in a very non-controversial way. But it's just that he needs the silence to establish a series of things that are going on in the story. It's not the crowd is quiet because they're uncomfortable. they're just quiet because we're not at... Hold on, we'll get to the jokes in a minute. Here is what you need to understand.
Right.
Here is the storyline, and shit will start getting funny once you understand the setting. But and it's a lot of it comes from the theater background. You need to see the stage setting. And that's what you do. You set the stage for sometimes a couple minutes into a story.
It's hard to do in 5 minutes.
It really is, and I think that's why we struggled for a long time doing open mics, Nick and I both, because it's very hard to do without one of us doing 5 minutes.
You know when Nick started getting really, really good? Once he just started ignoring the light, he's like, I'm doing 9 minutes.
You can come get me. Yeah. You know?
But you don't have that option until you prove that you're worth it. You know, it's like I've never been lighted. At Hody's, I haven't been lighted in years. Because Bob knows that I'm not going to abuse it. I'm not going to go way over. But it's like, I had to earn that. I had to earn that Eric knows what he's doing. Let him fucking do it. And Nick and I both did that. And it took us a while, and it took us Hody's. That room was what allowed us to grow into the comics that we are. But it's very, very difficult to set up a 5 minute story where you don't have jokes until minute three, and two minutes is painting a picture and establishing and setting the stage, and then fucking around. It's very hard to work out 5 minutes in an 8 minute stretch of material. And that's what I would do. I'm doing an 8 minute rant. Sometimes you got to fast forward. I don't have time to make the crowd like me for a couple minutes, get us all happy, and it's like, oh, he's kind of charming, and he's funny. All right, now let's get to the real shit. It's like, oh, this is an 8 minute story. We're going to fast forward right to the real shit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to burn half the crowd in the first 30 seconds, and the other half the crowd is who I'm going to use to judge whether this material is going to be successful or not.
Yeah, it's an interesting investment, trying to get people to invest in your material, even if it isn't like... punchy. A lot of times I think about it as like that the first minute of your set, regardless of what you're doing, is kind of you setting the rules. Mm-hmm. You know, again, because it is so formatless that within the first minute, if you've gone set up punch, then you're like letting people know, like, oh yeah, hey, no need to panic. One of those comics.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna.
It's not gonna get anywhere goofy. If you don't hear a laugh in the first 30 seconds, it's because that joke didn't work. And it's very much, it's like, here's how the way it's going to go.
But if you're doing something that's just tougher for people, then it's like that first minute or so is like...
the first 45 seconds of it is, who the fuck is this and what is he doing?
Yeah, yeah, I'm not going to give it to you. No, sorry.
That's why it'll be interesting to see your guys' show, the people who come that want to hear that. You know what I mean? Because I feel like you'll feel like you have a better show if you have a whole crowd that are... they want to engage with you for 3 minutes for a setup.
I think the advantage of doing the opening that we've discussed, we have an opening act on every show that's not quite stand-up. It's music or something else, some type of variety performance, a very bizarre... And I think anybody that's going to have that, oh, I'm not going to give it to you personality, is going to be burned before we even start the show. Before Theater Cruelty even begins, they're going to be completely alienated from our opening act.
Can you imagine, Eric and I... co-hosting a show?
It's going to be weird because neither one of us are hosts in our style, or at least the successful idea of what a host is.
Well, like we for the Chiba shows, it was good.
It's mostly Weston toning you down.
Yeah, Weston would bounce me out, and then it's like I'd do something weird, and then he'd give me this look like.
I thought we did a good job of having a good podcast like.
Oh, yeah, just like a rapport.
On stage.
And I think I love when you guys host the show. Because
you're not always performing,
Right.
The podcast isn't always performing. It's just like...
it's conversation.
Bullshit.
It's being real for a minute. Well, I think that's what's so cool about Nick, too, is there's no real line on when he isn't performing. He doesn't have, like, a real character he jumps into and out of, He sort of just fades into...
Well, I've talked a lot about that with some of the people that we know that do very specific characters. And some of them are like, wow, I wish I'd given him a different name, or like, committed to this voice, and something like that. And it's funny because for me, it's more just, again, that there's less boundaries, And if you just think of yourself as a caricature of yourself.
Well, and we all have a degree, too, of, like, what your real personality would be, but you tone it down for society or whatever reason, because there's a standard on which people are supposed to behave. And I think that you just allow that to slowly dissolve on stage. But it is you. It's even in the character, you're characterizing parts of your personality, you're exaggerating parts of your personality, but it very much is still you, just unchecked by social rules. And right. I think that's what makes, allows you, can tighten it up a little bit for a podcast or whatever, and you can have a normal conversation like an adult, and then you can go into Mystagog Holland shit without having any sharp line of where you become.
Right, yeah.
It's well, this is stage Nick, where he gets fucking weird. It's like, no, he's weird in real life. He just keeps it
under wraps a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
As best I can, you know. As best that I can. Yeah.
Yeah, you're the most normal one. I don't know how you got into this.
I don't know. I think I just come off as normal, which is... It's always weird to hear that, because people say it a lot.
Even weirder.
That goes back to the swearing thing. It's like, I couldn't... I didn't feel like I could get work into my act, because it was like, you're just a normal, like, dad. What? Why are you saying
your dad, so guy much? Next door, you know.
Like, I've American always father, said the F-word like, that much. It's always it's have. Like,
nah, don't worry. Yeah, I think that... Well, I think that's the thing, too, is that there's this assessment of what people think when they see you.
Right. Your appearance. And you you play that
really
well.
Yeah,
you have
a lot of material your opener specifically about that, I think. Nice. And it's like, it does work. Like, the line that always stands out to me is, it's like, well, face it, either way, you know, my dad's
not proud.
You know? And it's this incredible, like... Where you do, on some level, you have to show up, and then it's like you know that you're making a first impression, and then...
And I know I come off faggy, I look faggy. And, like,
well, what was funny to me was when we went over we were kind of getting to know each other, and you invited us over to your kid's birthday party, and I was like, I wonder if his dad will be there. I'm going to see if he really is disappointed. I'm going to watch there.
No, my dad's totally so, cool.
I'm curious if that's like a joke, or if it's like a... Kind of joke. Or...
It's more of a kind of joke. My dad is totally cool with my personality. He used to joke when we were a lot younger that he didn't care if one of his kids were gay. He just doesn't like faggy behavior, which is ironic that I happen to be heterosexual and faggy. I think he probably would be less uncomfortable
if he was just a manly kid.
Yeah, if I was gay and I butchered up a little bit, I probably would make him uncomfortable less often. But I kind of enjoy that. Like, that's I even had a bit about it that I kind of expanded a little bit last time I was doing that headline set, where I was talking about just how amused I am by the idea that I should be trying to convince people that I'm not gay. It's like, right. First of all, there's nothing wrong with being gay, so I have nothing to prove. You know, it's like proving I'm not right-handed. I don't really give a fuck.
It's none of their business.
Yeah.
It's none of your business. Whatever.
It isn't, but even if, like, it's like, what do I have invested in proving that I'm not? Exactly. It's like, if you want to think I'm gay, if that makes the world easier for you to figure out by just, oh, he's just in the closet. All right, fine, think I'm gay. I don't give a fuck. It's just like, it's weird to me that this would be my best attempt at closeted. It's like, I'm this gay and I'm straight.
I'd work way harder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I would put some effort in. I would change my oil more than the... Yeah, that's what I said in the bit. And I finally pulled it because there was like 10 people in that crowd and they were like a little uneasy. And there was a guy in the front. I don't know if he was gay, but he was, you know, kind of... He could have been gay, could have been a hipster. I don't know. But he was a little uncomfortable with me saying faggot a whole bunch. But that's not a gay thing either. That's just fucking white people are very uncomfortable anytime you say anything that makes white majority...
Well, there's this list
straight
of words
people.
That you can think about whatever you want about those people, but just don't. Don't share it. Don't share it in public.
Yeah.
You can hate them as much as you want.
Well, and that's what's funny, but you can't support them if you use the language. And I've actually had a lot of gay guys, they haven't complained, but they do come up to me and discuss their uneasiness with how frequently I say faggot on stage. Which is upsetting to me to a degree, because I don't... Those are the people that I want to offend the least, obviously, because I'm very much taking their side on an issue and relating to them. It's like, no, I am totally... identify far more with gay culture than straight culture, even though I'm a straight guy. I don't want to make those people uncomfortable. But then again, I'm not going to not say that.
Right.
That's an important word. It's an important part of that bit.
Yeah, I think, yeah. People can be so overly sensitive. Just for the sake of being... Like, they think they're being PC by being like, I don't think you should say it. Did you listen to how I was saying it? The point behind it?
Yeah,
you weren't
exactly.
listening to the point, were you?
And I get a lot more vicious when, like, other straight people say, you know, I don't like how often you say faggot. But when gay people come up to me and say they don't like it, then it's like, it hurts a little bit more. Because it's like... I try to explain it to them like it's going to change their mind, which is pointless. Right. But... And I don't... The thing is, I really want them to enjoy what I'm doing.
Well, it's interesting that they would even, you know, come up to you and have a dialogue.
And it's always the most sell. Like, I've had a lot of people come up to me and talk about things I've said on stage, and the gay guys who've come up because I said faggot have been the most civil, the most intelligent, and the most understanding of my perspective and why I say that. And some of them, those conversations have gone on hours, and they're totally cool, and it's always ends with a big hug, and we become Facebook friends, and they come to shows and shit. It always goes well, but it still, like, upsets me a little bit that they don't initially get what I'm doing.
Well, I don't think I'd have to go talk to a gay guy who doesn't have a problem with what you say. Like, that'd be the person to convince.
I had a lot of those.
Like,
but...
hey, talk to him. I don't know. Yeah, sort it out. I'm just doing my bit.
Yeah,
right. I like it.
You go figure out your gay shit and come back.
I'm straight again. I'm really not that interested.
I can't keep track of who I'm offending, who I'm not offending. Just
you really can't worry about it. You know, it's like, and I've gone through various stages of trying to offend less, or trying to be gentle about offending, and I've had, like, my intro bits about offending people, and I've had disclaimers, and I really, honestly, still don't know what the fuck I want to do about it. I feel like I need to approach the subject that I'm offensive, or I'm considered offensive. But I feel like it's a double-edged sword, because if you talk about it too much, too early, a lot of the crowd turns off. They go, wow, how offensive is this going to be?
Right.
Like, I feel like I could have done without it when I did the Chiba Hut show. I opened with a little bit of a warning.
I feel like it wasn't necessary.
There
was a guy with a gun on his hip. I think that was...
His little warning was necessary.
Yeah.
That was funny. That was a fun show.
It was hilarious. I still tell that story.
Oh, man. This guy did some gun jokes.
Dude in the front fucking row with a gun. Just
you know what? Not even the scariest show I've ever done.
And what was great, the guy was so cool with it.
Yeah, he was.
That was
what
really was
cool.
Awesome about it. I was like, see, he's having a good time.
Well, his friends were busting his balls hard.
I'm sure.
They loved it. I've never seen anyone laugh as hard at that joke as the three guys that were there with homeboy with a gun.
Yeah. One of them actually told me that they give him shit for carrying the gun around all the time. That guy really believes in carrying his gun around.
So who'd you offend on your Facebook page today?
Oh.
You had to have a disclaimer on your Facebook page.
This should be interesting. I'm curious to see if anyone's going to listen to this podcast now. I'm having a thing at my school.
We always are, too.
This could get me in trouble, but I take risks in life, so fuck it. At my school, we had this drama incident. It's all fucking drama. It's a bunch of 18-year-old girls. It's just fucking nonsense. It's like junior high. It's insane. So this girl from the other... We have two rotations. We have the A rotation, the B rotation. I'm on the B rotation, and it's basically just one is on the floors Mondays and Fridays, or Mondays and Wednesdays, and the other one's on Thursdays and Tuesdays. We don't work in the same area at the same time. One of us in the classroom and one of us on the floor, and then we switch on opposite days. Anyway, someone threw away the toaster, allegedly because it was broken, and one of the girls in the A rotation flipped the fuck out. She came in our classroom, like, freaking out about how the toaster was missing, and...
Wait,
yeah, this is real, exactly.
Is this like a break room toaster?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I got it.
And they were losing their fucking mind about it. And there's one of the girls in my class has been listening to the song Mr. Steal Yo Man, and she keeps joking about it and replacing man with different things in conversation. You go, oh, Mr. Steal You this, Mr. Steal You that. And she goes, oh, Mr. Steal Your Toaster. And everyone laughed. And she posted it on Facebook. And she got in trouble for cyberbullying. And, yeah, right?
Oh, no.
We're adults. And that's why I wrote the first thing. You can't bully adults. It's harassment. And if you have to read...
I'm being bullied.
Someone has to show you somebody that you're not friends with Facebook page. You're not being harassed. That's fucking retarded. But that turned into drama, and they came back in, her and another girl who's completely unrelated to the incident whatsoever.
Wait, you posted something?
No, we're getting there. This is what the girl posted, Mr. Steal Your Toaster. And the girl who came in, freaking out about...
It's a great name for an album or
something. That's why it was so funny, and we all laughed, and then she posted on Facebook, and I got a whole bunch of likes from everyone in our class, because we thought it was hilarious. And then they came back in, her and some other girl who had nothing to do with this, but she's just like the bodyguard. She's like the old bitch at the school. She's like... in her 30s, so she's like there to, you know, to play reinforcement. So she stands in the doorway with her arms crossed. Right. And the other girl's like, you guys talking shit on Facebook? You got some fucking shit to say? And it caused this big thing, and then the teacher made them leave, and then I drew a big toaster on a poster board and wrote peace offering. And then they threw that away because they said it was going to make drama. Anyway, we're doing acrylic nails this day, and I made a toaster out of acrylic. It was like a one-inch toaster with the little slots and a button and a power cord. And I made it, and they went, and they put it in the place where the old toaster was. And it was like this little acrylic nail toaster. And I took a picture of it, and I had the Facebook post. I don't know if you guys saw the Facebook post.
I did.
The toaster has been the source of much drama at school today, so I made one. to helping to resolve whatever conflict. I got in trouble for cyberbullying because of what I posted.
Because of the toaster?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not friends with any of these bitches. So apparently somebody that I am friends with from my class is friends with somebody from another class, and she showed the girl who was upset, and she went to the principal of our beauty school and showed her, and then I got in trouble for cyberbullying. So now somebody is looking at my Facebook page who's not my friends. So that's why I posted the bullying thing, and then I posted that other disclaimer this morning, because I have a feeling that when I get back to class on Tuesday, I'm going to get yanked in the office about another offensive Facebook post, and then I'm going to point to the disclaimer and go, this is the rules for my Facebook, you know? If you want to read my shit, but I don't want to hear you get complaining because I don't give a fuck.
Called to the office for cyberbullying.
We're adults, too.
Because of just, Facebook.
Just to clarify, this is in high school.
How old are these girls?
Like 18, 19? This girl, the girl who got upset, the toaster girl, she is like in her mid-20s with a kid, and she's like crying about a fucking toaster. Oh, wow. Crying and she's being cyberbullied about a toaster.
I think she probably just had a rough morning with her kid.
Probably.
Got to school, all she wanted was her fucking bagel toasted.
And I understand that.
The toaster's thrown in the trash, she flips her shit.
That's exactly what happened.
And there's no stopping that train. Once you flip out once... You just said, like, now they're bullying me. Now
exactly. She was just, like, on intensity level. And then one of the girls in my class was defending the whoever threw away the toaster. The toaster girl got the impression that this girl threw it away because she was like, it was already broken. And then they get a fight. So then they go out in the hallway for
bitch,
a break.
No, you didn't.
That's exactly what happened. And she goes, that bitch threw away the toaster. And then Telly goes back in our room and she's like, she just called me a bitch because I threw away the toaster. I didn't even throw away the fucking toaster. And it's like this epic fucking drama.
You didn't even tell that story.
I was just fucking retarded that it's gotten
to
this point.
You need to talk about that bitch threw away the toaster. Shit.
It's insane. Come on. I never realized how little in common I have with 18-year-old girls until I went to beauty school.
And how much you have.
Yeah, obviously. Because I'm fucking cyberbullying boys on the internet.
Because you did get
involved.
You're
a mean girl, dude.
I am. I'm Lindsay Lohan in this shit. Yeah. Well. So yeah, and then the same day I got yelled at for that, I got yelled at because I had a blue bandana in my pocket. And she's like, that's gang related. I was like, no, it's not.
Yeah, yes. What gang has jumped Eric?
It's the Crips. It's the Crips of Fort Collins,
he's
Colorado.
A Crip. Okay.
Yeah,
Fort
exactly.
Collins Crips.
And I was like, I've been wearing a bandana in my body for like 10 years. Oh, and it's like, it's a beauty school, so we're all like, everyone's got like their jewelry
like
and shit.
Expressing themselves.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's not a lot of accessory options for men in the first place. Yeah. So it's like,
belts,
I was a little defensive.
Watches?
Yeah, that's
earrings,
about it. And a fucking bandana.
Chains.
So I was a little defensive, and I was like, look, so was a blue t-shirt, if you want to get down to it. But I'm not in a gang. I'm not representing a gang, obviously. And she's like, no, I don't think you're in a gang. It's just we're having some trouble with... They're
with
being
the gangs.
Hush, hush. They are. They're having some type of trouble with something they can't tell us about. But all the educators say that it's something very serious that concerns everybody, and they can't tell any of us. And they asked me not to wear red or blue bandanas for a week until it blows over.
Maybe they gave everybody... Hep C or something.
I have no idea what happened. So I said, the black one's cool, right? And she's like, yeah, the black one's cool. And the next day she was in her classroom complaining about dress code. And I was like, I follow dress code. I make sure my gang flag is black. I represent the toaster gang. And then she threatened to write me up.
Oh,
for saying
God.
That in class.
Oh, my God.
So it's a fucking nightmare.
You realize I'm an adult with children.
Right? I know. Yeah, I know. I know.
I'm a grown man. I find this toaster thing
actually
just kind of funny.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
I find your whole write-up process silly.
Yeah.
Okay, write me up. What does that mean?
Okay, my tuition checks are still coming in on time, so, I mean, we're good, right?
Yeah, right. Can we ignore this and go back to being fucking adults for a minute?
Would you, do you have any sort of frowny face sticker I can take home and show my wife?
Yeah, dunce cap.
So she knows.
She could write on my hands.
Just so she knows.
Eric was naughty at school today. And that's the... I think that's the bigger problem, is that that's my attitude towards everything. Because I'm an adult, and I've been an adult for fucking years. So it's like a lot of the girls there are just out of high school, but I'm not.
Right.
And I'm not going to act like I'm out of high school. So when they say things like, well, you're going to get written up for this, and then I go, okay. And then I walk out of the room. And then they think that I don't have any respect for authority. And well, I don't. But,
well, yeah, no.
But,
hey.
But I especially don't have respect for, like, other people's drama. It's like... If you have drama that's unreconcilable about a toaster, then you need to sit the one girl down and go, look, get the fuck over yourself. We done with this? End of story. Everyone else who is making fun of you is right because this is retarded. You're having a hissy fit. You're an adult. Fucking put your panties on and grow up. And that's the way you handle
she's
a situation.
She's
going
to have to own it at some point. She's going to have to come in and make a joke about the toaster.
She is. She's going to have to own it.
Yeah, she's going to.
And the problem is they want to completely brush under the carpet. Like, any mention of a toaster gets you in trouble.
Exactly.
Now. Like, you can't, it's like the N-word. You can't
you should
even
be like,
mention
toaster
it.
Gestapo. Yeah.
I toast you.
Yeah, you can't even say it. Like, people get, it's like the T-word now.
And
a toast.
A toast.
To toast.
To toast the cyberbullying.
The machinery that we use to make that bread.
Whatever round. We may call that piece of machinery.
Whatever it is. To certainly make not a blender.
Bread into toast.
Certainly not a blender.
And I cannot make fun of it. Like, that's my personality. If something is like a button, I'm going to make fun of it relentlessly. Because
oh,
that's
God.
Fucking hilarious
if
to me
was,
and people are getting carried
if
away
If there
about
was
this.
Toaster drama anywhere to be found in my life...
You would be making toaster jokes 24/7.
I would fucking love it.
Yeah.
You know why? Because real life is actually full of actual earnest problems all the time.
I've actually
things,
done really, really good. Because Nick's heard a lot of drama.
Yeah.
I'll come home and tell him about...
Your work job.
Drama. You know, and he's just like, what?
Yeah, I'll just be like, I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
I mean, my current work situation is more or less
no
just
idea.
Working in a room with one other guy in his early 60s. So he and I are like, you know, there's no drama. It just
yeah.
seems silly.
But it's always been one person.
Yeah.
Any story, it always involves one person, and then it's everybody else
somehow
gets involved.
Gets yeah.
in. And that's how this was. Like, I wasn't even involved in the situation. When they called me in to yell me about bullying, I was like, well, who am I bullying? Just out of curiosity. I don't know who complained. I don't know who read my Facebook, but I'm not friends with any of these whores. So exactly, who is being bullied by me?
Bitches and whores.
Yeah.
That's probably
be part of it.
They just know in your eyes, even when you don't say it. And it's like, that guy called me a whore like 6 times this weekend, didn't he? I'm certain of it.
I'm gonna have to put the link to this podcast and mention that I mentioned this fucking event. Yeah. And then all my Facebook friends who are in my school are gonna fucking hear this shit.
We'll have like 13 more listens.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. But no, I would love if there was toaster drama going on in my life, like cyberbullying and everything, because it would help to distract me from all of the real problems that life is continually
yeah, there's shit.
You know, some of the times you see what people choose to get dramatic about.
I always wonder if people from work check my Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure,
like,
I'm sure they do occasionally.
Talk shit about anything, but that's the number one rule. You never put anything on Facebook.
Right.
I'll creep on somebody's Facebook for sure.
Oh, yeah. You got
we'll
it. That's why it exists.
We'll look at stuff and just laugh and laugh
but,
some more.
Yeah, but again, drama is just so funny because it's like, but what about all the other terrible shit?
Yeah.
Hey, whose life is not going 100% ideal right now? All right, yeah, let's get into a fight about a fucking kitchen appliance.
Well, what's funny is that two of the people involved in this toaster drama were just bitching about the Ferguson protest yesterday, about how everybody getting up in arms about something that doesn't matter. The next day, there's a fucking riot over a toaster, and it's like, oh, well, thank God no one got shot, because this is toaster drama here.
Yeah, well...
It's worse than racial.
Yeah.
It's worse, much worse.
Much worse than the state of race in modern America.
It's hilarious to think that there's a person who would walk into their break room and see the toaster thrown in the trash can and think, somebody did that to me.
Yeah, somebody did that to hurt
me. That couldn't possibly be broken. Yeah. That was a fucking aggressive move against
me. They were after me.
They saw me get out of my car with bagels, and they ran over here and they threw it in the trash.
This is the toast conspiracy. Yeah, this is the toast.
And the idea... Like, when it gets to the...
psychopath does it take to throw a toaster away to get at somebody? Like, fuck that guy, I'm gonna
throw away the fucking microwave next to him in there.
You know what?
Just for no fucking
I'm
reason.
I'm just gonna lose the lid to the blender. That'll show him.
I'll just go in Monday perfectly morning and put the Keurig in the trash can. Yeah. I'm like, no more coffee, sorry.
Well, my wife said that I should bring in a toaster, like, as a peace offering. And just bring in a toaster and be like, are we resolved? I was like, they would lose their fucking mind if I walked in there with a toaster. Because you can't even mention it now. If I walked in with a toaster, they would continue
You'd
that.
Be cyberbullying.
They would consider it fuel on the fire. They would
go,
"Oh, he's just bringing up the
toaster." We're just trying to let this.
Should find a broken toaster.
Yeah, go find the shittiest.
We're just
toaster.
Trying to let this toast situation cool off, Eric.
Yeah.
And you're.
That's exactly what they keep saying, and you need to stop bringing it up. But it's fucking funny.
Stop fanning.
And it's
the
not
fire.
Bullying. What
All
side of
the
what side
burned.
Of the bullying am I on? Because when the girl from our class that got called a bitch made a federal case about that, I told her to get the fuck over herself too. I was like, "She called you a bitch. What?" And.
You are probably, though, just rocking the world view of all of these 18-year-old girls.
They're like, that 25-year-old dude's really bitchy, isn't he? God damn it. He's
and
mean.
They are appalled
so
by
faggy.
Everything
so
I say.
So faggy. So faggy.
They're appalled
it's
by
like,
everything
well,
I've ever
A,
known.
He's in beautician school, but then B, he can out-cat all of us. And then C, some of the times he just calls it right down the middle of the line, and he makes me feel like a silly little 18-year-old bitch.
And then, it's like, Eric, I haven't seen you on the shows for a while. He's like, dude, I'm performing at work every day. Every day.
I'm just pissing people off.
Pounding
right.
the pavement, you know, being like,
I
you
am
think
working,
that.
Yeah. I've got an open mic for 8 hours a day, every day.
You should,
At least six times a day, I realize how depraved my sense of humor is, though. Because I'll say something, and everyone is shocked, and then I go, oh, the line's different here.
So what else is in the break room?
There's a fucking couple microwaves, and there was a toaster. There's a refrigerator.
Rest in peace.
There's a vending machine.
Take up a collection. Everybody throw in $2 and we'll get a new toaster.
Right, yeah. I mean,
I even bring up the toaster, people lose their shit. They think it's...
Eric, just you're fanning fire. The flames. Yeah, yeah. You're fanning the flames. Soon all of the bread will be burnt.
Because we have to, very much like junior high, we have to draw a poster in a group almost every day on the thing we're learning about. Where we have, yeah, I swear to fuck. It's a big, like, the size of this table with markers, and we have to write in pretty letters and describe what everything is. And then I just draw shit on it while the rest of my group is working on stuff. So there's a lot of weird drawings in our room. I drew a satanic goat over a bridge with a troll and a midget troll on a leash under the bridge. I drew a pirate ship and a light bulb dripping blood into Wonderland down the rabbit hole. And then the last one, I drew a monkey. Troll? Because I drew him midget size. He's got a big head and a big ass, and he's little like the other troll.
Kid troll, though?
No, he's got a big head and a big ass. He's a midget troll.
It's definitely a midget.
I drew a midget troll. Yeah.
The artist knows his intention.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last one, I drew a monkey at an office desk with a pencil and a paper and a stapler and a tape and toast, a toaster and a loaf of bread and a big fucking knife on his desk, and then a monkey at a desk with a fucking communist flag behind him.
You know what? Actually, I would kind of love to take some odd course of school where I was just surrounded by like 18-year-old girls. Not in the pervy sense that, you know,
just to
you
fuck
just
with
jump,
their heads.
But just to, yeah, just to be like, particularly because, like, as you guys have gathered about me, my best tactics are the dead eyes and then also my total level of apathy. You know, I really loved showing up to the theater department and being a little older and like, just, you know, there was like a small handful of people in the theater department who had had an interesting catalog of life experiences. And then the much larger were like, you know, some Safety Town USA kind of kids, and so they'd be enthusiastic. And people would get into catty little arguments at the theater department, and nobody, I never really got to be in one. Because,
oh, that's so much fun.
Because it was like, but everybody
so
could tell right off the bat, they could tell, well, Nick isn't going to give a fuck until he decides that it's worth, like, maybe physically hurting somebody over, you know? And it was a good set, but I missed some of the times I would see the catty bullshit going on, and I'd be like, ah, oh, man, I'd love to go get a slice of that. Just walk in, sit down, be like, so, everyone seems unhappy here. Huh? Huh? Can I get in on that? What are we fighting about, guys? What are we fighting about? Because I have opinions, too.
You should start calling me... toaster, the machine that makes bread into toast. Just, like, don't refer to it as a toaster.
Really should.
But talk about it all the time.
You should start talking about it.
One of our educators talked about a toaster strudel the other day. I was like, we do not say that word here.
Do you want a pastry strudel? I can't say toaster.
Spring those you in. Should be like, you should start referring to it as the day the machine went away. Just like, get really serious about it and be like, well, I don't know, guys. I mean, things just really haven't been the same since, you know,
since the day the machine went.
I'll
refer to that when I advertise the link to this podcast. I talk a lot for all my beauty school friends. We talk a lot about the day the machine went away.
All right, let's plug your show before we wrap up. Let's give date. Let's give time.
29th.
Yeah, December 29th.
That's
7 p.m.
Tuesday night?
Monday night. Last Monday night of the year.
Is this going to hopefully be a monthly thing?
It's going to be hopefully every other month.
Every other month. Same. Great.
Unless this is, and the lyric has been honestly like so really encouraging.
Yeah, I've
like,
seen
it's
their,
never
their
been,
posters,
like,
their advertising.
I don't know if
they
I've
would
ever
let
been
it fail four times before they talk
that,
seriously.
That's
about
the thing is that I think that unless it goes super super wrong, but I can't even really
like
imagine
a riot.
It.
I don't think it will.
I can't,
we have a riot.
Right, if there was a riot at the end of it, then
just
maybe
like, don't book black people.
Maybe
don't invite the cops.
They would be like a little upset.
I just see
but
some really conservative religious
we'd
people
still
come
get
in,
the,
and Eric just get them.
Well, and the coolest thing though is that they say
if they
that,
could kick it a show, that'd be phenomenal. Because
they're one of the only
Westboro. Let's see if we get Westboro.
I guess Westboro. Yeah, let's see if what they're doing.
There's only a handful of theaters that play NC-17 movies in the Lyric.
Is
or
in
the Lyric
Colorado.
Is one of them in the state of Colorado, and their whole thing has been that they believe that the parents who bring their children to the show are responsible for using the discretion of whether or not a child should. So they've been so really.
An all ages show.
So they've been totally
it's
down.
It's an all ages show. They aren't allowing anybody.
It's
an
all ages show, but it's called Theater of Cruelty. It's got
a disclaimer on the fucking poster
and a disclaimer on the front.
See, did I pick the creepiest poster? I picked the one on you on a leash.
People yeah. have to be 17 to get in. Is that what
no.
I'm saying?
No, I'm just saying that they
it's all ages.
Totally.
So you're
have no interest
like
in
a 12-year-old showing up, being like, "Fuck." Yeah.
If it is, if they do, if a 12-year-old shows up.
The lyrics policy
and
is it's
they
their
get,
parents. To
yeah,
just...
and they get offended. The parents are like, well, I brought my son to this show, and I can't believe the content. They'd be like, well, I guess we won't see you in a couple months.
You won't be coming back
I guess you're not
two.
A regular. I guess you are not going to be one of the regulars. And so that's just, again, it's really outlandish how cool they've been about
Absolutely.
Promoting the show.
Yeah, I've never worked with anybody that was that as enthusiastic about the show as we are.
And
we
as enthusiastic
are.
About... As weird of a show as
yeah.
this is, too. Like, because
we
no...
were a little conservative about how we described it from the beginning.
But I mean,
the
once
more
you pitch
they
a
were
person,
into it, and it's like
once you pitch a
up.
Person to like, oh yeah, we're gonna do a show. We're thinking of calling it Theater of Cruelty, and they're just like, that's a cool fucking name.
While Sweet. I was explaining
you
it
know?
To her, she was looking it up on
We've
Wiki
always
and
said
Google
that.
Images.
You gotta have,
a good gotta
name.
Have a good name. Gotta have a good name.
Yeah,
thanks.
I think
Anton
that's why our horse. That's why our horseman show's failing.
The names are hard. And
no,
that's,
it's group therapy.
Group
therapy.
We're
group
gonna call it the Illegal now. Comedy Show as a tip of the hat to Illegal Pete's, but we decided not to go with that.
Well, let's plug your horseman show this month.
Yeah, that's gonna be the next day. Actually, it's gonna be
Tuesday the 30th.
It's gonna be the last one for the year, and then we're gonna pick up in January. But we won't have a February show because Surfside is moving to a new location.
What?
Really?
Yeah. So we're gonna be taking off February and potentially
where are they going?
March. They're going to where the East Coast used to be.
Oh. Hmm.
Apparently, Linden is going to be
yeah.
paved into a Pearl Street-esque thing. They're going to extend the town square
up.
Down to Linden, and it's going to end like a fucking walk to Rodizio's. It's going to be pretty dope for Rodizio's business.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Rodizio's are going to be right at the center head.
Uh-huh.
Right?
They're
going to
be like at the fucking top of the hill.
Fuck Boulder and their stupid
they're gonna
outdoor
be,
mall.
They're,
so
Rodizio
stupid
Grill
down there.
Is going to be the
Let's
clitoris. Of,
yeah.
Is going to be the clitoris of the downtowny pleasure center.
Exactly, and we're going to be a labia pounds. Ring at the Surfside on Linden.
Yes.
So yeah, they're taking over the East Coast location, and they're going to be moving. And it might take them a while to move because they got to renovate. So we may skip the March show as well. So no February, no March, but December 30th, 8 o'clock at Surfside 7. And then January will be our last show at the Surfside at their current location.
That'll
wow.
be fun.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, one of the hugest draws of that place was that you could smoke on that awesome patio out back until you weren't allowed to. So the current space, you know, it's like, all right, yeah.
Well, yeah, I have no connection there.
I've got, you know, I recall it, but I mean.
I like that room, though. That's the only thing that's bummer for me is I really like the layout of the Surfside. It's like a fucking closet.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun performing in a closet.
That dark little every day of your life.
Right? It is. Like, you can pack that room with 15 people. It's the only show where you
oh, yeah.
have no turnout, and it's like fucking packed. Standing room only, 9 people. Fuck
can
yeah.
I just say? Can I just say though, one of the things that I do enjoy, and it's an interesting study, is that we've seen and we've commented on this is some of the times the way some of the talent you guys bring up from Denver. Gets uppity when they're being ignored at the Surfside, and it takes
yeah.
a really special delight. It actually makes me happy to be doing stand-up comedy in Fort Collins, because it's like, oh, you're getting stonewalled, and it hurts your feelings?
Yeah.
welcome to Fort Collins. You know, it
yeah,
makes us
shit.
Feel, it makes me feel pretty good about doing this here,
mm-hmm.
where you just know, like, oh, yeah, no, that half of the room has no interest, and just because I fucking bitch about it doesn't mean... That,
it's
going to
go
know,
away, yeah.
You have
power
they're connect. Suddenly going to, you know...
Well, I think what's a little bit of a bummer, too, is that the Surfside's been a pretty good room to us, and we do have a good following there amongst Surfside patrons, but the last couple shows, I don't think it's been people there to see comedy. They've been there to catch up with their family. It's the fucking holidays.
Right.
And they don't give a fuck about a comedy show, frankly. And we discussed actually skipping the December show for that reason, but we decided to go through with it. But we booked a lot of more local comics.
There's something
who
to
would be able to handle being ignored.
To just, yeah, soldiering through.
Yeah.
Soldiering through. Andrew Orvidal, I saw this on Facebook somewhere, but he wrote a great article about Denver as a mid-market comedy scene and how the thing that makes Denver different from other mid-market comedy scenes is that in other mid-market comedy cities, people move. After a little, once they hit a certain peak, people move. But now in Denver, there's, you know, a much larger, distinct population of people.
Of
solid professional comics.
Solid
yeah.
professional.
Like Andrew himself, Ben mm-hmm. Roy.
Oh, yeah. Well, all of Growlix, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. I thought he was obviously, he was an interesting person to write the article because mm-hmm. it was like, you are one of the guys you're talking about, mm-hmm. you know, where it's like you could have gone to New York or LA.
I think he did LA for a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think Andrew did LA for a bit and came back. Ben Kronberg was a Denver comic. He moved to New York, but he's here all the fucking time.
Ben Kronberg is actually the nephew of my high school principal.
No shit.
Yeah. Mr. Daly found out, Mr. Dennis Daly, who I think I shook the hands of, like, piss drunk, like, seven times in my senior year. Mr. Daly was like, I know you're interested in comedy and stand-up and performing, and, well, my nephew, Ben Kronberg, he does some stuff, but, it's a little edgy, you know.
Yeah,
and so
Ben's
it was so funny.
Riot.
And well, and then when I finally tracked down and started watching Ben Kronberg, and then at some point, you know, saw him in real life, and I was like, yeah, Dennis Daly was not lying. He said, this guy is like my super, like, you know, righteous, right-minded principal was not lying when he called his nephew's comedy a little edgy.
Yeah,
you know.
You saw his big fucking display on Last Comic Standing.
Oh, when
right?
Roseanne Barr uh-huh. yelled at him?
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Told him to fuck off. He stands
and
there.
And he asked her for a compliment first.
He stands there silently for like, what, like 30
30
or 40,
seconds?
30
a long
seconds,
time.
Long time in comedy land. And he goes, what, like you people start working the instant you show up to your job? And Roseanne Barr was not pleased.
Yeah, and he's like rifling through his phone and pulling like notes out of his pocket. He's like, no, you don't deserve that joke. And it was
yeah, and then so I believe there was a trending hashtag for a while, just fuck off, Ben.
Yeah.
And
cause... Well, because she said she thought he's disrespectful to his audience, and he like makes big eyes at her, and then he's like, I'd like if you'd start with a compliment first. And she told him to fuck off.
I love Roseanne.
Which is funny, because she started here too.
Yeah.
The Squire made her cry.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. The Squire make anybody cry. That room was a fuck hole.
Once I told them,
I missed it. That's why Greg was the go-to for
mm-hmm.
as our headliner
oh,
for
yeah.
Theater of Cruelty. It was that I mean, the Squire is fucking institution.
It is the brutality. A hobo once threw a bottle of hand lotion at me. Like, I hope it was hand lotion.
Yeah,
was
shit.
Nice assumed.
You never know.
It didn't get him. So.
You never know
it's
the
okay.
Squire. That room was fun when it lasted. Sam runs it now. Apparently, it's completely changed. I've done it
really?
Once since Sam took over, like the very first month, and it wasn't the same. But I've heard it's cleaned up. It's like a decent room.
Huh?
It's been they done gentrified it a little bit, so it's
wow.
More hipster, less whore and homeless people. I think.
All right, you
gotta
sure
do what you gotta do.
Up. Thanks for hanging with us.
Yeah,
yeah. Thanks for having me. I had a
blast. Look forward to you guys' shows, your endeavors. Hopefully, people will get out, see it. Come to Yum Yums this week. A couple other shows
oh,
for
yeah,
documentary stuff.
And
check the Facebook.
Yeah, what's going on with that? The documentary.
Well, just got a few shows, and they're gonna film us hanging out. We'll see. We'll see. I honestly, we have some ideas, and then we'll
the
show
Friday.
Up, and we'll do.
Something
whatever.
Will happen.
Dan's gonna be with us, so I'm sure. Whatever.
There'll be mania.
Well,
drop,
I mean,
drop the dates for that.
Oh, it's this coming Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. December
Yum
16, 17,
18. Yum Yums, then Crazy Carl's, then Pateros, right?
Yum Yums 9 is the year-end final, so I'm pretty sure just about everybody who's on that show, we've had around.
Yep.
Kind of around here. And then Crazy Carl's the next night.
I was supposed to be on that,
8,
but I'm
30.
Booked in Denver.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to be on the 19th. I'm going to be on the 19th for Pateros. I was supposed to be in the 18th for
oh,
Carl's,
that's right.
But I got, I'm doing a... If you're in Denver, I'm doing the Four Horsemen show at the Geese Town Bar.
Huh.
Goose Town Bar. I don't know what
the just
the
four of you, or you got two others?
Oh, no, it's we're opening for Carl Hess from L.A.
That's cool.
Pretty fucking cool, yeah. Yeah, so it's like the All Four Horsemen at an Abbey Alt. And we're opening for Carl Hess.
Cool. Well, thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It was entertaining. It was
yeah.
The toaster situation.
Yeah, that was fucking retarded.
Surely we could all go shopping and find a used toaster.
You should just start sending them anonymous toasters in boxes. All the listeners, send anonymous toasters in boxes.
Oh, man. We just mobilized a great
three niggas just got hauled off an ambulance.
Now there's too many of them.
One nigga done took his shirt off, talking about. Now who else wanna fuck with Hollywood Coke? This just my interpretation of the situation. Spoded, odor, dopealicious angel. I can remember that damn thing like yesterday. The way she moved reminded me of a brown stallion horse with skates on, you know. Smooth like a hot comb on Napa ass hip. I walked up on her and was almost paralyzed. Her neck was smelling sweeter than a plate of yams with extra syrup. Eyes beaming like 4 carats a piece, just blinding a nigga. Felt like I cheated the whole order at presidential. My heart would be so damn fast. Never knowing this moment would bring another life into this world. Funny how shit come together sometimes, you dig? One moment you frequent the booty clubs, and the next 4 years you and somebody's daughter raising your own youngin'. Now that's a beautiful thing. That's if you're on top of your game and man enough to handle real life situations, that is. Can't gamble feeding baby on that dope money. Might not always be sufficient. But the United Parcel Service and the people at the post office didn't call you back because you had cloudy piss. So now you back in the trap. Just that. Trap. Go on and marinate on that for a minute.